Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism, where we talk about earth-based, earth-revering, science-consistent pagan practices to enhance the quality of our lives and to help us make a better world. My name is Mark Green, and I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Yucca.
And today we are going to talk about
practice. So both what a practice is and how one might either start a practice from scratch or perhaps vitalize one that has gone dormant.
Right, exactly. Because we, pretty much all of us, I think, have had that experience of having life kind of get in the way, or maybe you drop into a little depression and suddenly the altar goes dark and the things that you've been doing to kind of feed your spirituality are not happening. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to work with that situation as well. But first, let's just talk about what a practice is and why somebody would want to have one.
Yeah. So what, I mean, for me to start with, it really comes down to the word a practice. A practice is something that you actually do. It's not just about belief. It's not what you think, but what do you actually physically do and do it again and again? What about you for the word, Mark?
Well, yes, I have an interesting relationship with the word practice because I think it's really interesting that it dovetails with the other meaning of practice, which is to rehearse something over and over again. For me, a practice is the, once again, as you say, the physical actions that I take in my life in order to feed myself emotionally and spiritually. And those can include rituals that I might do at my altar or focus. They can include walks in nature. They can include watching the sunset. They can include drawing a tarot card every morning, which I do. There are just a lot of different little moments throughout the day that are meant for me to remind myself that this life is an amazing journey and gift, and that it's a magnificent universe. And by informing myself through those ritual practices and habitual practices, it makes my life better. So that's the reason why I have a practice. People's practices look widely different. For some people, gardening is most of their spiritual practice, just getting their hands into dirt, making living things, fostering living things and helping them to grow, harvesting, all that kind of stuff. And that's a perfectly legitimate kind of spiritual relationship to the earth. Other people do more formal kinds of ceremonial rituals with tools and things like that, and that's fine too. The point, though, is that in our mainstream culture, which I call the overculture, we are not encouraged really to develop a spiritual relationship with life. To the degree that we're encouraged to have spirituality at all, it's a spirituality that is about an afterlife and about appeasing a God figure who wants us to do stuff in order to attain that afterlife. So the habits of a spiritually realized life here on planet Earth are not inculcated into most of us as we grow up. And we have to discover that either as adults or if whatever time, you know, we happen to encounter this. So that's a challenge, I think, for many of us who come to a pagan path as adults or later in life. And it's one that that we need to address, and we'll be talking more about how to meet that challenge.
So I noticed as you were speaking, sometimes you've referred to practices as in specific practices, and then also your practice as an overarching or sort of umbrella.
That's a good point. The irony is that I use practice as the plural of practices. So my practices throughout the day, there may be various different little symbolic things that I do or moments that I take in order to experience things. And all together, all wrapped up, I call that my practice.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Okay. I think that I do that. I use it in a similar way. It's my, and the practice itself is intentional. It is something that I have chosen, but the practices are more habitual.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Those are habits that I have or moments that I take out of the day for a moment of intention, which we talked about in a previous episode. We did an episode on rituals. And so if anyone's listening, just jumping in, that may be a great one to listen back to as well, because I think there's going to be some great tie-ins between these two episodes.
Absolutely. I think that the most of what we talked about in the rituals episode was sort of bigger parts of a practice, like the celebration of an equinox or a solstice or something like that. We didn't talk so much about kind of the day-to-day. And mm-hmm. I consider that big Venn diagram circle of my practice to consist of both the things that I do at holidays around the year, what I call Sabbaths, mm-hmm. And the little things that I do on a daily basis in order just to remind myself that I am on this path and that I have values that are meaningful to me and that the universe is magnificent and I am a part of it. So a practice writ large can contain little tiny gestures and also sort of big celebratory things like putting up a Yule tree or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that can be very different depending on the, you were starting to touch on that a little bit before talking about for some people, it may be the gardening or it may be the having rituals or things like that on a daily basis, or rituals filled with symbols that are more formal. So I think it's important to say that there isn't a right way to do it for being a non-theist or being an atheopagan. You don't have to do it this way or else you're not a pagan.
Right, exactly. In the Atheopagan principles, I think principle number 4 is that I enact regular ritual in observance of my religion. But the definition of ritual is left blank for people to define however they wish. And if it's a gardening practice, then that's what they do. If it's a walking in nature practice, then that's what they do, or climbing mountains, or reading books, or lighting a candle every night, or.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that in order to be practicing Atheopaganism, which is my path, you got to have a practice, but what that looks like will be entirely unique to you. And it's all about what works best for you. There are no sort of preformed canned rituals like, you know, the rosary or communion, stuff like that. There are no ordained rituals. You figure out for yourself what you want to be in your practice.
Mm-hmm. And that might change over time. In fact, it most likely will change over time.
Certainly. Certainly.
Yep.
So, Yucca, why don't you describe a couple of things that you do during the day that you consider to be part of your practice, and then I'll do the same.
Sure. I think I've definitely brought it up on the podcast together, but big ones for me are what I call sun time and star time. And so that's simply getting outside for 5 to 10 minutes during the day and then at night as well. And just being present for a moment in the sunlight, or at least in the brighter light, even if it's a cloudy day, which we don't have a lot of here, but even if it is, it's still a lot brighter than it is indoors.
Mm-hmm.
Our brains will adjust for us, so we might not notice that, but the rest of our body really does notice it. So taking that moment just to be present, to observe, to ground a little bit. And that's something that I involve the family with as well. And that'll be a time that we do some intention setting, or at least it's a time that I guide the children with doing intention setting. I often do a personal intention setting when I'm getting ready in the bathroom in the morning. And our star time is the same, getting outside, but this time at night, whether the stars are visible or not, and being quiet for a moment, just being present. And that's a time with the kids that I've been teaching them about developing a practice around gratitude. For me personally, again, that's something I will do at the end of the night, usually during the time that I'm brushing my teeth and getting ready for bed. I'll do a personal moment to, okay, you know, kind of letting everything, breathing out, letting the day be done, and feeling some gratitude for that.
Sure.
So those are some of the more formalized parts of my practice that I try to do every day. But there are other things that, like the gardening that you were mentioning, that are incredibly feeding, and just choices that I make about what kind of lifestyle I want to have and how is going to fulfill the goals that I have and the values that I have, which really are around being connected, feeling connected with my ecosystem and being part of it, not just feeling like I'm living on it, but I am part of it. So the more time I can spend with my hands in the soil, or, you know, sitting next to the tree or whatever, that's a huge part for me on that daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What about for you?
Well, it's interesting because I have a few formal things that I do every day, but central to my practice is simply paying attention, watching for the changes in the color of the foliage, watching for the way the angle of the light is different because we've gotten later in the year, watching for the different kinds of cloud structures that tend to form at different times of the year, and noticing that that, you know, the season is moving on. All of those things are things that are really central to me as a pagan and that I consider to be a part of my practice, watching every sunset I get a chance to watch.
Mm-hmm.
They're things that feed me. And because they feed me in that really deep emotional way, I take advantage of them as best I can. Even on my computer, I have very beautiful visual images as backdrops and wallpapers and all that kind of stuff, because of the natural world, because that's what I want to surround myself with.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of formal activities, I think I've probably mentioned this before, but not being a morning person and yet having to get up in the morning to go to work, I am usually pretty groggy and kind of fumbling for a cup of coffee when I first get up.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do that, I do go to my focus, my altar, and I do draw a tarot card every day, and I contemplate the meaning of that card and set it up so that it's visible there. And that becomes kind of a thematic opportunity for reflection throughout the day. The meaning of that card becomes a lens that I can look at the the questions and the challenges of the day through, which is an interesting experience. Even though I know that the card is randomly chosen, it's still the rich symbol set of the tarot deck gives me an interesting, different way of looking at things, which is very helpful to me. When I come home in the evening, oh, and in my office, I have an Ethiopagan symbol mounted on the stand of my monitor. So it always reminds me, this is what I'm doing. This is my path. These are the principles I want to live by. These are the values that I support. All that kind of stuff, those reminder pieces. And then when I come home at night, I light the candles on my focus and contemplate it for a while because it's very aesthetically beautiful, and especially in candlelight, and just kind of drink in all of the symbols of the various manifestations of nature and of the wild and of people that I love and things that I love about living in the world, things that I enjoy, and all of that just helps bring me joy. And that's the whole point, right? Isn't the point of life to be as good a person as possible and as happy as possible? I think it is.
That's my take. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
So when you said when you come home, you light the candles, is that something you do as your transition into being home, or is that something you do later on in the evening after you've been home?
I wait till after dark. Mm-hmm. And I mean, usually my transition to being home now is going to wash because of the COVID virus.
Sure.
There are two sections to my focus, my altar. It's built in a bookcase. Mm-hmm. And I removed one of the shelves to create a double high shelf. Mm-hmm. And that is the world, the universe. And it's full of all the symbols of living and ecology and things that I love to do and people and all that kind of stuff. The shelf below that is the underworld. And that is where the pictures of my honored dead are, and images from cave paintings in Europe, and bones and death images and the tools that I use in my Hallows rituals every year. And so when I light the candles, I will first light the candle for the underworld, and I will say the honored dead and put the candle back down. And when I light the candle for the upper world, I say the sacred earth, and then light the candle, put it down. So these are little things, but they cue my mind. I've been doing ritual long enough now that it's relatively easy for me to drop into that liminal, warm, present state. Mm-hmm. That kind of trancey state that rituals can do for us. And that is a very pleasurable state and a very wise state in my experience. We can access the wisest parts of ourselves there. So it's a healthy place for us to go.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, that's beautiful.
Well, thank you. So we've talked about what a practice is and why someone would want to have one.
Mm-hmm. Well, a daily practice, though. There's also the seasonal as well, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, or at least there is for me, and it seems like for you as well. That seems to be a kind of pattern that we have. And we've spoken a lot about the Wheel of the Year.
Yes.
At least the Wheel of the Year is the framework that I use for it, but not all pagans use that particular framework.
That's right. I mean, one of the things that we've come back to in this podcast over and over again is that you can't generalize about all pagans about anything other than that they call themselves pagans.
Most of the time.
Yes. And if they don't self-identify that way, then they're not pagans, because you can't make them be pagans if they don't want to be.
Yeah.
So there are exceptions to all of the things that we're talking about, but you know, you can identify trends and patterns, kind of overall propensities of people to do things. And celebrating the Wheel of the Year is something that's very, very common in the pagan community. And in my Atheopagan path, it's something that I do, the equinoxes and the solstices, and then the midpoints between each of those create eight holy days, eight Sabbaths, where we can celebrate the season, the turning of the season, the metaphorical meaning of that time of the year in the agricultural cycle, and in the case of my practice, also in the arc of a life, from the very early beginnings at the beginning of the year all the way into death at Hallows or Halloween, Samhain. So it's a very meaningful and moving set of practices that can give us so much more than we get in this culture, which just seems to be about accumulating stuff. So as I think about this, you know, one of the questions that that I get confronted with quite a bit, especially from people that are coming from other religious backgrounds or non-religious backgrounds, people who are coming from paganism into atheopaganism, they tend to kind of know the drill because they're familiar with doing rituals and having a practice. They're just going to change the nature of those rituals and practices to no longer include gods or the supernatural.
Sure.
Whereas someone coming out of the atheist community, or someone coming from, say, evangelical Christianity, is really going to be at a loss about, what do I do? How do I start? And unfortunately, there's two sides to being very flexible and do it yourself. On the one hand, it's really wonderful to have all that freedom. But on the other hand, you find yourself staring at a blank piece of paper thinking, what do I do?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like the structure is there, or there's, you know, you don't know what, when people say, oh, we'll just do what works for you. Well, how do you know what works for you?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And the predominant religions are very much about telling you what you're supposed to do. You do this, you go to this building on this day every week, and you say these prayers and you sing these songs, and it's all programmed for you. And that is not what paganism is about. Paganism is much more about having your own agency and making your own decisions about what works for you in a spiritual sense. So when people come to me and ask, well, how do I start a practice? What I usually do is I encourage them to do three things. And there's on the atheopaganism.org website, there's actually a post about this that you can access from the front page of the site. The three things are, first of all, create an altar, or I call it focus. That is meaningful to you. And that can be anything. It can be objects from your childhood and, you know, a stone that you picked up on the beach when you were walking with your lover, and a picture of the Crab Nebula because it's beautiful and it makes you think of how incredible the universe is. It can be anything. But go to the trouble to deliberately and intentionally create a physical arrangement of objects that speaks to you emotionally. So that's the first one. And that's a long stretch for some folks. I have tremendous sympathy for folks coming out of atheism into pagan practice, because it can feel really hokey. It can feel stupid. And I had those same experiences when I was first exposed to paganism back 1987, because I was an atheist and I had no experience of ritual at all or religion at all. I'd been raised as an atheist. So, go ahead.
Can I jump in with something for sure. That? For me, I find it really helpful when I hear that self-doubting voice in my head about, oh, you're just making it up. Yeah, I am. But it's okay. As long as it means something to me, yes, I am making it up, but it still works.
Right. Right. And I mean, if you really want to reframe it and flip it on its head, look at me making stuff up.
Yeah.
Go me, right? You know, that's, I'm a creative person. Look at me being creative and doing things that help me to live a richer life. The critic voice is cruel and it doesn't want us to be happy. And we all have one, so we all have to wrestle with it. And what I really encourage folks that are getting started to do is just breathe and tell that voice that it's not helping and keep going.
Yeah.
Because it will make a change in your brain. It will make a change in your way of experiencing the world if you keep going.
Yeah. Fantastic. So I derailed you a little bit. You were going to start talking about from after creating a focus, the second thing that you suggest folks do.
Well, I thought that I would interrupt that for a second.
Oh, okay.
And ask you what you would recommend people do first.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so I think the first place, the first thing would be if I was starting from scratch and someone said, hey, what would you suggest I do? I would say find a time that you can take for yourself and do some real self-reflection upon what you really value, what you want. You know, a few minutes ago, both of us said that we thought, you know, life was about being happy and being as good a person as you can. Well, for you, what is it? And just having an idea of what your goals are. And giving yourself the space to really think about that. So having to think about what you really value. And I think actually the creating the focus, that's great because it does force you to do that same thing that I'm talking about, is really think about what is important to you. What do you value?
That's a really good point. And I agree. I think those two things dovetail together really well. You know, reflection on what it is that you value and find meaningful and moving, and then enacting that with physical objects.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a first step. And that can be a big step for people. It can really take a while for them to get comfortable enough to do something like that. But it's well worth doing.
And it's something you can come back to again and again. It's, you know, that's never going to be static. You're going to continue to change over time and understand yourself in new and different ways over time as well.
Yes. And there's no wrong way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just about you. It's just about, you know, creating an artwork, literally, of arranged objects that expresses you. And mm-hmm. So, you know, the idea that you can not be doing it right really doesn't enter in. So if you hear that voice in your head, just tell it to go away.
Yeah.
The second thing that I encourage people to do is to do a simple ritual. And that can be as simple as sitting in front of your focus and taking some deep breaths in order to calm and ground yourself, and then lighting a candle, and then and maybe burning some incense, and simply contemplating the meanings of all the different things that you see there arranged in front of you. That in itself is a ritual. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be elaborate, and it doesn't need to have all kinds of different phases to it. You can contemplate a particular challenge that's happening in your life at that time and think about how the resources of the things that you care about that you've come and brought together and arranged will help you to see your way through that problem.
Mm.
For example.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like riding a bicycle. You have to start. And
yeah.
And at first it may feel really clumsy, but maybe not. I mean, I've had some people say, wow, I did my first ritual and it was, I had no idea that I could feel that way. And that's just makes me so happy. So that's what I encourage people to do as a second piece to building a practice. And then in a third piece, I have them start to contemplate what they would like to celebrate around the course of the year. And typically that's kind of organized around the wheel of the year that we just talked about. But, you know, what are the milestones that really matter to you? What are the moments in the year when you want to stop and say, look at what's happening here. This is amazing. This really has meaning to me. Thank you for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 8 times a year is kind of a minimum number, in my opinion, for having holidays and celebrations.
Well, some people really connect with the moon cycle and do it as a monthly full moon, new moon, or whatever phase they connect with, and find that really helpful as a waystone throughout the year.
Yes, very true. Very true. One of the things that I found as I was becoming a pagan, because I was paying attention, and I mean, I had worked for environmental organizations for years, really devoted environmentalist myself, very committed to the natural world. I've had many wonderful experiences in the natural world. But the truth is, I didn't know what phase the moon was in
mm-hmm.
at any given time. I didn't really pay very much attention to the fact that we had crossed the ecliptic and we were now in the waning part of the year. And what I found as a pagan is that now all of that stuff is just second nature to me.
Mm-hmm.
My feelers are out for it all the time. I'm sensitive to what's going on in the natural world in a way that I wasn't before, because I've built the habits of being that way.
Yeah.
And
I think that adds a richness to life. You know, I don't think it's, at least for me, it's not it doesn't bog me down with having to memorize things the way, you know, we were forced to memorize things in high school. It's exciting. It's empowering to just be aware of what's happening
Absolutely
around us and with us. Right. And again, that language of talking about around us as if we're not part of it. No, we're completely part of it, and it influences us on every level.
Yes. And that actually raises the topic of a different kind of celebration that happens in a pagan practice, which is rites of passage.
Mm.
Because the seasons are turning in ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't pay attention, you're going to turn around one day and suddenly realize, my goodness, I'm elderly. How did that happen? which kind of happens anyway, I got to say. I mean, I'm 58 years old and I still have a hard time believing some of the effects of being 58 years old. But understanding that we are a part of the turning cycles of the world and that we have cycles in ourselves that are also turning.
Mm-hmm.
And being open to the awareness of all those things, to me, I agree, it's a tremendously enriching aspect to my life. And I am not a big memorizer. I mean, I can identify kind of the key tree species and some of the bird species and plant species in my local area. But I'm not the kind of person that's going to be a bird watcher and be able to identify hundreds of different kinds of birds by their call or by seeing them, because cataloging everything in nature isn't what's meaningful to me. What's meaningful to me is understanding the nature of the relationships that bind it all together and watching the cycles of how, you know, certain birds leave and then they come back at different times of year, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people who are naturalists who are really into, you know, being able to identify all the birds, all the plants.
Yeah. It can be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
And then especially, and then, ooh, you get to see that one that, oh, you know, you're about 50 or 100 miles too south for it. And yet there it is.
Right. What is an avocet doing here?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to circle back. Your second suggestion was to create a simple ritual or to enact a simple ritual. And I would add in the second thing that I would suggest would be to find somewhere in your day that you could plug in a ritual, somewhere where you already have a habit of doing something. And great places, I think, are your daily shower or brushing your teeth or that cup of coffee in the morning. I think that is such a potent moment in the day when you're pouring that coffee and starting your day. Places where we already have our habits, that kind of ritual, the habitual ritual,
mm-hmm.
and taking a moment to add something into that is a place where I think there's a lot of opportunity. So that's what I would invite people to look for in their life, is opportunities to bring in their goals and working towards their goals and values.
Meals are a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, especially refugees from Christianity, sometimes really bristle at meal blessings because it smacks of saying grace. Mm-hmm. But when I eat, I like to just think to myself, this food came to me, it arose from the earth, and it comes to me by many hands that helped it to be present here for me to enjoy. And I'm grateful for the ability to eat today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it really needs to be. But that in and of itself is a ritual. And on special occasions, I will say basically that out loud with whoever is there eating with me. And what we try to do is to say in unison at the end, we are grateful to eat today.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, wonderful. I think this might be a moment for us to transition to the third topic for today, or question we had, which was about revitalizing a practice.
Yes.
Let's say you have had one, or perhaps you're transitioning in from a different background. You know, how do you bring life back into it? How do you make it a practice again and not something that you feel that little ping of guilt every time you look over at your altar or your focus.
Yeah. I coined a term for this, which is dusty altar syndrome, that has apparently resonated with a lot of people because people mention it to me. I think all of us experience times when our spiritual practice stutters. We get too busy, or we get too depressed, mm-hmm. or we get too sidelined with things that are new, or a new relationship or something like that. They can be, it doesn't have to be something bad. It can be something good.
Sure.
And all that I can recommend is start again from basic principles. Do one thing. Draw that one tarot card. Light a candle once. It doesn't matter if you can see a lot of dust. You can clean your altar later if you feel like you want to, and you don't have to if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. But as with all things, it starts with a first step. And getting your practice going again is most easy when, instead of thinking, oh, wow, I have this elaborate practice with six things that I do every day, and I haven't been doing the six things, so just to hell with it. Go back to one of those things.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be an all or nothing situation.
Right.
Yeah.
You can think about adding any or all of those other five things later. But for now, simply reminding yourself, I'm on this path. I'm living this life. I choose this sense of connectedness with the universe and with humanity. And I say that advisedly because choice is very important in this. Mm-hmm. You know, when you let your practice lie fallow, it's because you made a choice, and you can make a different choice because you're free. And that is a great gift that not everyone has, and we should celebrate it.
Wonderful. You know, I don't think I could think of a better note to end on.
Okay. I'd like to remind people that if you have topics or questions that you would like to pose to us, we have an email address at thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com. And we check that regularly, and we've got plans for some shows that people have suggested. So please do shoot us an email at thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com. And we'd be delighted to hear from you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you so much, Yucca. I really enjoy talking with you, as always.